All right, we're in chapter 10. We've got two more hours. We go through chapter 10, finish the book, and on Friday is your test. I will cover Proverbs and Ecclesiastes.
Is that
all
too?
What?
Is that all too?
Yeah. What does it say here? One of the last verses in the book says, making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh.
Amen.
Some people, you know, they have scriptures up on their walls, you know, like, trust the Lord with all thine heart. You know, others have this scripture up on their wall. Much study is a weariness of the flesh. There was somebody who told me the other day, they witnessed to this guy on the job, he's Catholic. He said he thinks the only scripture he knows in the whole Bible is the one where Paul says, take a little wine for thy stomach's sake. That guy is an alcoholic anyway, he drinks all the time. Basically an alcoholic. twisting the scripture to your own destruction, huh? All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Looking at these final conclusions, chapter 10 here, some common sense duties, starting at verses 12 to 15. We haven't gotten that far. Yeah, I think we're down to 9. Okay, my marker got moved. Okay. Yes, that's right. We just finished verses 8 and 9. Okay, verse 10. If the iron be blunt and he do not whet the edge, then must he put to more strength. But wisdom is profitable to direct. In other words, you're too slothful to stop and sharpen the axe. And so you're going to work twice as hard. You're going to work twice as hard. And those of you that have ever worked with chainsaws, well, I'll tell you, what a deal. If that chainsaw is blunt, you will wear yourself out and you'll wear out the chainsaw.
Yeah.
And all it would take is just a few minutes to put a nice edge on those things, and the thing will just cut right through butter. You know, if you know how to do them right, they'll just. I saw a guy once that had a nice saw, big, huge. It was like a three foot blade. He just hold that thing, and it would just eat right through this huge log. And this log must have been, you know, about 4 foot diameter. It didn't go all the way through. It just ate that thing up. He just held it with one hand. Let that thing just sink right on down through. And that's when I was first learning how to use one. I had this little thing, and I just, you know, on some little log, you know, some little tiny log. And I watched this guy, and I said, And after he was done, he sharpened them just real quick, just put a little burr on it, you know, just a little burr. And thing would just sink right through that wood. And it wouldn't curve off to the left or the right or anything. So that was a real learning time for me. And so it is in life. There's a lot of things where a little bit extra effort in preparing yourself will save you so much time. Just a little bit. Just that little extra diligence in making a situation, a circumstance right can add so much to what you get done. It's wisdom will direct you. Wisdom is profitable to direct. It'll save you a lot of effort, save you a lot of work. Verse 11, surely the serpent will bite without enchantment, and a babbler is no better. In other words, he'll bite, friend or foe. Doesn't matter whether you've got enchantment or you don't have enchantment. A serpent is like that. He'll nail you. Well, so is a babbler. Whether you're friend or foe, a babbler is going to hurt you. And it may be if you don't have any friends, maybe you're a babbler. You know, one that's always blabbing. Verses 12 to 15, talking about the using few words is also one of those common sense wisdoms. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, full of grace, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. It starts foolish, but if you follow it and you believe it and you imbibe it, it's mischievous madness. You'll end up not even living sensibly. A fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be, and what shall be after him, who can tell him? In other words, in all these words, there is going to be deception, there's going to be confusion. Who's going to tell what's after him? I mean, it can lead to all manner of difficulty.
The labor of the foolish wearies every one of them, because he knows not how to go to the city. He's a fool. And so the point, the conclusion to these four verses is, be of few words. Be of few words, and be of long consideration. Think before you talk. Think how you're going to get to the city. You know, there's some guys, they tear off in all directions at once before they think of what they're going to do. And it's much better to sit down and consider and weigh before you head out, you know, and do it. And you've all probably had that experience. I've had the experience in some projects where I just dove into it, and later was very sad I dove into it. Now I don't do that. If we have any major project, I sit and I think for a long time. And I have four or five guys come over and think with me and look at it and give me their opinion. And, you know, before I do something of major import like that, get it, weigh it, think it through, consider it, judge all the angles, and be really slow about stepping into anything, because what you do, you know, what you've committed yourself, you got to count the cost. Are you willing to punch it through? You got to be willing to do that. And so once you start, be willing. And so be a long consideration before you act, so that you know how to go to the city. Otherwise, just tearing off, you know, before you realize what you're doing. And haste makes waste. All right, verses 16 and 17. Woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child, and thy princes eat in the morning. Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is a son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season, for strength and not for drunkenness. Basically, what we see here is that, you know, life is so short that you better desire good leaders, pray for good leaders, because they'll really affect how you live. People are greatly impacted by the country they live in and by their leaders. They're greatly impacted. Morning was the time for judgment. You get up, you're fresh, your mind is clear. It's fresh in the morning. There's an atmosphere in the morning that's really good. It's really positive. And I love walking to school. And I've often walked to school in the morning. I just love that time. Just the freshness. And even when it's raining, it's just so fresh. And, you know, you walk briskly and it's such a good time. Morning time is the time for judgment and justice, and just the freshness of it. Your mind is clear. It's not the time for feasting. Feasting time in the morning was often the action of drunkards. The action of drunkards. And so your woe to you when your king is a child, that is, he's unable to rule your land, or your princes eat in the morning, and that is when they're just feeding the flesh, because then they're not going to be passing proper judgment. They're using their position as for their own advantage, and because life is affected so much by it. Okay, verse 18. By much slothfulness the building decays, and through idleness of the hands the house drops through. Let me tell you this. The good life is not the slothful life. That's not the good life. I knew a guy. This guy was a sloth of all sloths. In high school, we'd be out there farming, you know, working away. You know what he'd do in the middle of the day? He would drive the Caterpillar, and he'd just get tired, and he'd want to take a nap. And so he'd leave it running in the middle of the field, making it look like he was working on it, and he'd get underneath it and lie down underneath it, making it look like he was working on it, and he'd fall asleep under the shade of the Caterpillar. And so you'd be driving into town getting some materials or something, you know, some parts or whatever. And he'd be under there, and, you know, the Caterpillar running, you know, and he'd come back 2 hours later, and he's still in this exact same spot. The Caterpillar's in the exact same spot, you know. Susan it away. That guy lost more jobs. Got kicked around more. He was a sloth of sloths. I've never met anybody like him. He couldn't do anything. Anywhere he'd go, he'd lie down and go to sleep. You know what I mean? He was like the door on its hinges, you know. So the sloth rolls over in his bed. That's what that guy was, getting nothing accomplished. Diligence is always good in everything you do. Diligence is always good in everything you do. Diligence will give you more experiences in life. You will have more experiences in life if you're diligent. You'll have greater rewards in this life if you're diligent. You look at people that advance in job situations. Who is it? It's the diligent people. Diligence also increases your capability. That's right. Because in diligence, you're giving yourself many more experiences. You enhance your abilities. You're giving yourself more training, basically. Therefore, there's more joy in what you do when you're diligent. Diligence will always exalt its possessor. It will. It'll eventually exalt you. The diligent shall bear rule, the scripture says, and become blessed. And, you know, my mind has often been this. If I go to a job, and it's going to be an 8-hour job, why not let that 8-hour job work for me, besides me working for it? And use that 8-hour job and be diligent during that 8 hours. And then I will train myself. And so that 8 hours, I'll walk away better trained, more capable, with a better attitude about myself, even though I may be more tired. But there is a weightiness and a heaviness that comes from slothfulness by just kind of standing around, you know. When I grew up in the farm country, we always laughed at the county people, you know, the county people. We'd be out there working, slaving, you know, 16 hours a day. They'd have their 8 to 4, and you know what I mean, and they would start driving into town. They'd always drive 25 miles an hour. And there'd be four of them, you know, they had to put in a new post, a stop sign or something. There'd be three of them, one of them to hold a shovel, an extra shovel, one of them to hold the signpost while the other one digs, one of them to stand over here and kind of wave at the people that go by, you know, with a little sign in his hand. And then one guy to do all the work. And they'd switch during the day. And I'll tell you, they would drive me nuts because we were paying these guys. Drive you nuts. They should have gotten rid of that whole slap. I tell you, the government, that's what it is. They should have gotten rid of the whole thing, and they should bid out all the work that they had to do. Bid it out. They'd get about 4 or 5 guys to get raise up companies, you know, their own making around there, bidding against one another and getting to certain jobs, and I'll tell you, it'd save them so much money. But nah, good old government, you know, you got to get all that. I tell you, it's eating this country alive. Now, over half, I believe, of the country now is... It just takes away all initiative. We're becoming as bad as communists, you know. And they got no initiative. They're all a bunch of sloths, you know. It just breeds that stuff, you know, that attitude, you know. Good old free enterprise. When I go to Bible college, I earned money by roofing. And you earned as much as you worked hard. And so if you worked fast and hard, you got more than if you didn't. Well, I'll tell you, that taught you. That taught you. And you got in there and you would push and you would push and you would push because mama and the kids at home needed milk, you know. And so you'd push and you'd work and you'd slave, and if it was tough, you'd do it anyway. And if you had to stay a little bit later, you'd do it anyway. And if you were cold, you did it anyway. And if it was raining, you didn't stay home. You went to work anyway. And it developed something in you. Okay, verse 19. A feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry, but money answers all things. What's it saying here? It's good, you know, to have a merry heart and at times to be spending money, but realize that after it's all gone, you've lost your money, and there's nothing to answer you when difficulty comes down the road. So, be ready to save your money. But don't save it all so that you never spend any of it. This is the basic idea. Feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry. And see, that's all good, and it's good to have that, but it better be within balance. Because you can blow all your money and then you don't have anything to answer when difficulty comes down the way. So have your good times, but also be saving and preparing for the future. Verse 20. Curse not the king, no, not in thy thought. And curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. There's a wise saying. Talking about anarchy, unsubmission, talking about rebellion, criticalness to those that are in a position of authority over you, it's just not wise. In fact, don't even let yourself think it. Because if you let yourself think it, you'll talk it. And if you talk it, it'll be heard and you'll be in trouble. Because it'll come out. And the same thing is true before God. Because as you think, you become. So don't even think evil against God. In other words, don't be thinking things that are contrary to the will of God. Don't even think them. Because eventually they'll come out. And you'll say them, and they may even become a part of your life and find yourself in trouble. Okay, chapter 11, we continue these wise conclusions for the good life. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Really a precious little verse. What does it mean? Bread represents the basis of life. It's your sustenance. It's that which sustains you. It's vital for life. The waters here is literally the face of the waters. Cast thy bread upon the face of the waters. Now, what is it probably meaning? Because of the context, And what is said after this, what probably it's talking about, is sowing a field. And it's a flooded plain. It rained more than it should have. It's going to be difficult to plant this year. But you need to get the seed in. Because if you don't get the seed in, then it's going to freeze up, or it's going to snow, or something's going to happen, then you're stuck. If you wait too long, you're not going to be able to plant. And that really, that water is a good thing. It's just so much of it now. And so you're in a difficult spot. Flooded plain. So what should you do? Well, you've got the seed in your hand. Now, if you keep this seed, you can make it into bread and live. But if you cast it upon the... But if you do that, then you won't have seed for the next year's planting. You'll be in trouble next year. Now, if you cast it on the waters, none of it makes bread. You may not get anything back. You may lose it all. So you'll even lose the loaf of bread you could have had for the next day. But if it does plant, you'll have 10 loaves of bread next year. Or 30. So you've got one loaf of bread now, or you have 30 next year, or nothing. What do you do? Take the chance. Take the chance. Because you've got to have foresight. Don't get bound up in this life of always concerned about your present lusts now. Take some foresight. Be willing to do without right now for the future. That's kind of been Reagan's policy in a lot of things he's tried to do in this country. And he's trying to bend that way and pull us out of all the socialism that has crept in. That socialism basically says, eat now and forget it later. That's what it basically says now. And our social security system is bankrupt. Now we're feeding, health, education, welfare has been the big beast, just sucking things right out of our economy. What percentage of the taxes go into that now? 40 or 60% go into social programs? Totally unbelievable. Totally unbelievable. Ridiculous. And so the idea, therefore, is ambition. Enterprise. Go ahead and take a chance. Go ahead and step out and try it. See what will happen. Because you won't gain anything if you just sit back. And you won't have the experience of it if you sit back. So it's better to go ahead and take a little chance because the blessing could be so much better. This is the same type of attitude that has caused many people to become rich in America with free enterprise systems. They've gone ahead and taken a stab at things. And in taking a stab at some things that look like they could be promising, sometimes they fail, but sometimes they really do well. And our system is based on that type of thing. On the investments and whatnot. It also applies, spiritually speaking, to the Word of God. Cast your bread upon the face of the waters. The waters is the nations. Yeah, nobody might get saved. Yeah, but somebody might get saved. In fact, an Apostle Paul might get saved. Or a Finney might get saved. Or a Moody might get saved. You don't know what will happen. If you're out there, you're at the grocery store. Cast that bread upon the waters. Yeah, but they might not want to hear. Yeah, but then again, they might want to hear. They might want to hear. Go ahead and cast your bread on the waters. Now they might get upset at me. Good, it'll help you die to self. You know? It's not going to hurt. Just go ahead and take a chance. Cast your bread upon the waters. And then notice it says, for thou shalt find it after many days. Well, that's kind of scary. Many days. There have been some people have been witnessed to, and they come around 6 months later and say, you know, I've never forgotten that conversation. It really impacted me. I know you haven't heard from me. I know I haven't said anything, but I'm telling you, something really happened, and I want to hear more. You know, that happened. It's going to come back after many days. Back to the original idea of planting, even when it's raining. Even though it might not take root, because see, you can't plow after you plant and seed and so forth because there's so much water there. Even though it may not take root, what happens though is the ones that do take root in that kind of situation are even better and more fertile than normal planting. And so you see, it's one of those situations where it's either nothing at all or it's going to be really good. It's going to be really good. Well, that you just got to take your chances. Go ahead and cast your bread. Same thing with witnessing. And the same thing with trading and commerce. There just comes times where you got to just cast your bread on the waters. Go ahead and send your trade across the sea and see what you can get back. You know, you may end up really blessed. You know, you may lose everything too out there in the seas. You know, the pirates might plunder. You never know what will happen. But if they are able to take your furs and trade them over there for their gold, well, I tell you, when that gold comes back, you'll be able to buy millions of furs. I mean, the
the impact of it, because there's a demand for your furs over there, and there's a demand for their gold over here. And so you can trade the two, you're going to end up much better. And so will they. So that's where trading and commerce gets its profit. Some of the older commentaries will say that what this is saying is give love abundantly. Cast your love out abundantly without expectation of a reward, because the reward will indeed come. Go ahead and love them. Yeah, but they might not love me back. Go ahead and open up for a powerful spiritual union with them. Yeah, but what if, on the other hand, see? Go ahead and just do it. Throw your bread on the waters. Cast out your love. That's what Jesus does. How many people are Jesus connected with that aren't connected with him, if you want to put it that way? That are not madly in love with him. They do not have that strong spiritual love for him that he has for them. Hmm? Does he keep loving? Does he keep doing it? Yes. How about parents towards children? Do parents stop loving because their children don't love them? Come on now, let's grow up. Let's be mature at this thing. Let's throw our love out on the waters, because it'll come back. Verse 2. Give a portion to seven and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. Now this is the same wisdom as the unjust steward carried out in Luke 16, 1 through 9. Basically, it's this. Be liberal to those about you in the good times, because you don't know when the bad times are coming. And then they'll feel indebted to you, and you're going to be kept and spared. Reach out, minister, give your love now that you're, whatever state you're in. Because when the hard times begin, you'll have all those friends and all those that you've loved, and they'll receive you into their homes. See, they'll take care of you. So give a portion to seven or eight. Do it. Be liberal. Be hospitable. This is also commending hospitality. And it's wise, because you don't know what will happen in the end thereof. So again, another attitude that's good in this life, hospitality and liberality. Verse 3. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall be. What's it talking about? It's saying the basic idea is that blessings or misfortunes will come your way. And the results will occur because of them. But you can't control it. So, resign yourself in the midst of misfortune. And in the midst of blessing. If you get clouds full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. That's great. You didn't have anything to do with it. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall be, and there's nothing you can do about it. So resign yourself to it, if it was a misfortune. You ever tried to fell a tree next to your house and went the wrong way? There was a guy that was cutting. He was in a real tight spot you're never supposed to get yourself in. He was a woodsman, and he goes to our church, and he used to earn his living that way, cutting. He was a cutter. He was up and down the hills with his chainsaw. He got stuck where all these trees were all around him, and there was only one exit, which you're never supposed to have. You're always supposed to have two exits from a tree that you're cutting. You only have one exit. He had that thing all judged, so he just cut it so it would fall this way, and the thing fell right down the exit. And that guy scrambled for his life, because it was a pretty good-sized tree. And I can't remember how. He's still alive, and he made it out. But it was a scary proposition. You never know. You just can't always tell. You look, you check the twist, you see where the limbs are, you see if it's leaning anyway. You check all of that. You check the thickness of the base, and then you cut accordingly. But it may fall to the north. It may fall to the south. You don't know what will happen. And that tree that's in your backyard, you're not sure how it's going to fall. Misfortunes or blessings. You're not really sure. And when it happens, it's going to be there, and it'll lay where it landed. And so you just have to take whatever comes. Resign yourself to the misfortunes and the blessings of life. Those people that grump around for half a day because they're upset something happened are not wise. It happened. Don't cry over spilled milk. The milk is spilled. Laugh while you clean it up. Get the good out of cleaning it up, Get the benefit out of it. Now the kitchen floor after you're done will be the cleanest it's been for months. Because the milk went under the fridge and it went under the freezer and everything else. Now you have to pull it all out and clean up the whole mess. That happened to me when I was a kid. Dropped a whole gallon of milk. And our floor was not level. And the milk went like, no. Went underneath everything. It was a mess. Whole gallon. So don't be overly affected. You can't control it. You can't control it. You get in a wreck. Start praising the Lord and witnessing to the guy you hit,
Why not? There's guys that have gotten picked up by cops and end up witnessing to the cops. Why not? May as well use take advantage of the situation. Why grump and groan? Now it's 2 days. You know, I've seen that poster that says, make my day, you know, and it's got it on the back of a car, you know, saying, go ahead and hit me, rear end me, you know, make my day. That's a carnal, such a carnal attitude. Hey, look, we got to be above that. We can't let our circumstances determine whether we're going to have joy or sadness. We can't let them do that to us. We've got to have joy regardless. You know, we've got to learn to rejoice in the Lord. So if the tree tells to the north or to the south, or if the clouds full of rain or if they're not, just rejoice. Resign yourself to it. Verse 4. He that observes the wind shall not sow, and he that regards the clouds shall not reap. Now this is the opposite idea of chapter 9 and verse 10, where it says, whatsoever thy hand findest to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. So just go ahead and step out and take some chances, because life only swings by you once. This is talking about the one who's overly cautious. You ever seen an overly cautious person? Overly cautious now. Caution is good. Over caution is not good. It's time to plant, but he's observing the wind. Boy, if I sow, that wind's going to blow it all around. I'm not going to get it plowed under in time. The birds are going to all eat it up. It's going to be a mess. I'm not going to do it. But then it blew day after day after day, and it kept getting worse, and it kept getting worse. And then the winter storm set in. Too late. You missed your sowing time. Because they sowed in the fall, see? And if you did not get it in the ground, it's just too late. And now all that time that it could have been sprouting and starting a root system, you waited because it was windy. And now it's too late. You were overly cautious. You know what I mean? And this the person that's so picky that they won't do anything until it can be done perfect. They'll end up not doing a lot in life. They'll end up missing a lot of experiences in life and a lot of blessings in life. You know, because they won't do it unless it's absolutely perfect. And it also says, and he that regards the clouds shall not reap. He's watching the clouds. It's in the springtime now. And he's afraid. If it rains, see, this is what will happen. If it's still standing in the stalk and it rains, the wind will soon dry it out. But if you cut it down and put it in the sheaves and it rains, that moisture will get into there before it dries out, and you're going to have a hard time drying it out. And if you keep that grain and there's a little bit of moisture in it, it'll rot and you've ruined it. But if you wait too long, guess what happens? It rains and they're so ripe that it knocks the grains out of the head and they fall into the earth. And you've lost them. When they fall out of the grain onto the earth, it's too late. And then when you go to harvest them, you put that size to that grain, and the shaking now will cause a lot of those grains to fall out. And so there's a certain period there where you've got to harvest. And if it looks like it's going to rain, sometimes you're just going to have to go for it. Well, if I leave it stand too long, I'm going to miss it. I've got to go in and reap. And if it rains on it after it reaps, I'm just going to have to try to dry it out. And if it rots, it rots. I mean, I'm stuck. I've got to move in on it. The overly cautious person, he waits too long. The guy that moved in there, he finds out, he goes in there, and it didn't rain that day. And he got a bunch in. And he went out the next day and clouds were there again, and he did it again, and it didn't rain that day, and he got a bunch more in while his other guy, his neighbor, is waiting. And then he finally ends up getting all his crop in, and maybe a little bit of it rot. What about his neighbor? He goes in there after it's too dry, and it all falls to the ground. He has hardly a thing. You can't be overly fastidious. These thoughts of self-preservation, too, they can cause you to draw back into unproductivity. Thoughts of self-preservation. I don't want to make any mistakes. I don't want to lose one little thing. Brother, you're just going to have to move in there and do the best you can. There comes a time where no matter what you do, you're going to lose. You know? And you just have to do what's going to lose the least. Really, that's the way it goes sometimes. This could also apply spiritually to the person that's waiting for the latter rain in order to witness. Waiting, I'm observing, you know, I'm watching, I'm waiting. And then when the rain comes, then I'll witness. No, you just go in there. Go at it now. You'll get the rain. Get out there. The rain will come. Share with souls. Reach out. Yeah, but the power isn't here yet. Don't worry about the, you know, Moody maybe didn't have it either, huh? What about everybody else who lived before you? What are the last generation? What are they going to say? Come on. Verse 5.
As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who makes all. The way of the Spirit and the growing of the child in the womb. This particular reasoning is what forces the previous conclusions. Because you don't know what's going to happen. You just have no idea. Since you cannot know the blessing or the misfortune of certain things that you do, you've got to just take chances in life. You just got to. You've got to just go ahead. You know, there are some men that are so bound in this area, they'll never get married. You know why? Everything has got to be just perfect. They'll never get married. They'll never find the right one. There'll always be the wonderment and the question, you know, because that's kind of a, you know, a scary choice to make forever and, you know, for all this life, you know, and have just that one. Whoa, that's kind of scary. You got to realize that, hey, look, there isn't the perfect one in the earth. No matter who you marry, there's going to be areas of adjustment and development and everything else. And be wise in your choice, but on the other hand, realize, you know, if you're going to wait until the perfect one comes along when you're 65, you know, I read a statement one time, and I don't know, but it was interesting to me. It was cute to me. It says, I waited for the perfect one to come along, and in the meantime, I got married. And you know, in a way, that's a worldly kind of concept. In another way, it's really the truth. Because, you know, what is perfection? Jesus is the only perfection. You know what I mean? And I've seen guys that have gone out into their 30s still waiting for the right one. Well, I'm glad I jumped when I did. I really am. I have been glad again and again and again and again. So I moved on it, you know. I beat all the other guys off with sticks and clubs, and I said, I took my prize. Ran off. You know, I really am. I really am glad. I have had, here I am. I'm young. I've had four kids. I've lived a full life. I mean, I have had so many experiences in life, and there's some of my friends that aren't married yet. Don't have any kids. You know, they're waiting for the right time. You know, and there might be things I would have done different, you know, sure. But I'm glad. You know, I'm really glad. Really glad. And now, while I'm still really young, my kids are growing up, giving my wife and I a lot of freedom, and there's a maturing process that's gone on in us because of all the experiences we've had. We've often told each other we grew up together, you know. Because we got married when we were 20, and I remember when my brother John got married when he was 20. I says, he didn't get married when he was 20. But when he was 20, I looked at him and I said, he's a baby. You know? Wow. I knew less than he did when he was 20. Anyway. You know, the point of it is, you got to take chances in life. You just do. You don't know how the child's developing in the womb, you know? Well, are you not going to have children then? You're going to wait to have the perfect child? How do you do that? How do you do that? And you know not what the way of the Spirit is? You don't know. You've got to just move. You've got to just take advantage. There are some that have held back in this move of God because everything, you know, just so... Somebody made a mistake over here. Oh, boy. Now, we're waiting until nobody makes a mistake before we step in and let God do something in our lives. Hey, we're going to wait a long time. I'll get saved when no Christians make any mistakes. You got to see what God is doing. Go ahead and press in and say, well, I may make some mistakes too, but I'm going to get what I can. You know? Don't draw back. In Matthew 25, verses 24 through 30, Jesus commended those that visited him in prison and fed him and clothed him and all of this. These were diligent people he was talking to. People that were willing just to reach out and do what their hand found to do. And they didn't have any feeling. They said, well, when did we do that for you, Lord? They didn't know they were doing that for Jesus. They just kind of felt like, well, I was just kind of busy just doing what my hand found to do. That's all. Jesus commanded them for that. That's what we need to do. Same thing. Okay, verse 6. In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. So work while it's yet day. Well, I'll try it in the morning, and I'll try it in the evening. And who knows which will be produce the best results. But I better do both. And see, that's why many people do multiple investments. They don't put all their eggs into one basket. They have multiple investments, so that in the long run, that's the wisest thing to do, because one may fall through and another one, you know, produce. So, basically, be diligent. Work while it's yet day. Labor, and God will provide the result. You see, God commends and commands faithfulness, not success. He commands and commends faithfulness, not success. It's like casting of lots. Go ahead and cast them. The Lord will dispose them. We purpose in our heart. The Lord carries it out for us. We are the ones that prepare our heart. Remember that from Proverbs? The preparations of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue comes from the Lord. So go ahead and just take advantage of circumstances, situations. You know, I just love people that do that. They don't just hang back and all that fear. They just go ahead and just, well, let's just see. Let's just go up and see what the Lord will do. Because the Lord can save by many or by few. Come on, armor bearer. I love that attitude. Let's just go up and see what the Lord will do. Let's just go in there and witness. See what God will do. Let's just go ahead, you know, instead of waiting for the right moment and praying and fasting and waiting for God, you know, just witness. Lord, you want me to talk to this person? Oh, Lord, you need me. Just go talk to him. You know, you got an opportunity. Just go talk to him. Just go share the love of God with him. Oh, that brother, he looks kind of down. I don't know if I should go to him or not. Should I go to him? Lord, help me. Should I go to him? You know, what's the perfect thing to do? The Lord would say, you know, you got time? Yeah. Do you love him? Yeah. You know, I mean, are you going to hurt him? Are you going to hit him? Are you going to knock him to the ground? You know, what are you going to do? Go to him, dummy. He needs you. You know, he could use your help. And even if you do say a few wrong things, at least your heart motive was right. You're not going to totally destroy the situation. Just go ahead, take advantage of it. You know? I mean, we just get all messed up in our minds. You know, should I hug him or shouldn't I? And we get all bound up. Just cast your bread on the waters. Don't worry about it. Yeah, but he might misunderstand me or misjudge me. I know. Tough. You got to wait until everybody knows everything perfect. I won't say anything until everybody understands me perfectly. Oh, boy. You'll never talk. You're going to be misunderstood. You will be. You've got to just take some chances in life. Be wise. Don't give the devil opportunity, you know, unwisely. But you just got to step out in life. Who knows? So delight yourself in the Lord. Commit your way to the Lord. Let your heart prepare things and then just go for it. Brethren, just go for it. There's some that, you know, they hold back from Bible college because everything has to be just perfect. Then there's others that just say, hey, I need the Word and so I'm going for it. And things are just going to have to fall into place, you know. I'm going to have to rush in there and I'll be wise and I'll take care of things as best I can. But, you know, to have everything balanced. Hey, look, when you go to Bible college, things just aren't going to be that way. It's just impossible. You're just going to have to, you know, and if you're married, and if you've got a family especially, it just isn't going to be. You're going to have to press. You're just going to have to press. In a move of God where God is demanding a lot. You're just not going to, you know, everything isn't going to be just all this perfect balance, you know, your little house on the prairie type atmosphere. You're just not going to have it. You're going to have to just do the best you can and go for it. But I'll tell you something. Those that try to keep everything in balance and kept themselves out of what they really could have had, in a year or two, they're going to be sorry. They're going to miss it. God's going to go on to something else. They're just going to miss it, you know. They won't have had all those experiences. Now, don't do unwise things and bring damage. You know, that's going to be a perpetual problem. But if you miss those things because you're a little bit afraid or a little bit concerned, you know, it's like the person that, well, they kind of hang back from worshiping before the Lord because, you know, what is somebody going to think? Oh, brother, you know, look what you're doing. You're stealing yourself of what somebody thinks. I mean, of the glory of God and of opportunity. It might be a negative experience. Well, so what? So what?
Right.
Step out. You know how people went through that when we first started worshiping before the Lord in the dance? You know, I'm kind of, you know, all this timidity and all of that, see? You know, what people think, you know, I've never done that before. Just get on your face, seek the Lord, you know, step out. Don't worry about it. You know, go through all that, you know, what is the perfect, absolute perfect thing? I tell you, we get so bound up. So bound up. That legalism, you know, that that letter that just wants to cramp you down and just bind you up. Instead of just saying, hey, look, you know, the Lord is for me. I love Him. I love Him. You know, I'm going to open myself up to Him. And, you know, it's not going to kill me. It's not going to kill me. And some have found great delight. All right. Verses 7 and 8. Truly the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that comes is vanity. Rejoice in life. You know, the light is sweet. And it's a pleasant thing for the eyes to behold the sun. You know, it really is. The sun is a wonderful thing. We up here in the Northwest especially believe that. And keep that heart happy. Keep that heart happy. And rejoice in all the years of your life. But don't forget that darkness will come. So you've got to keep the two balancing each other. Remember that the sun will not last forever. Rejoice in the light, but know it's going to be gone after a while. So get the good out of what you've got, knowing it won't always be that way. We can't live life properly unless we do that. Because if you think that the chief good is going to be in, oh, this is the perfect day. No, it's not. It's not. And enjoy it, though. Get the good out of it. But when it rains tomorrow, don't let that ruin your day. It's really folly how people live, you know, that are unsaved. It's just such folly. They're fools. Now, there are some wise people that are unsaved. They don't let the weather and other things. They just learn to enjoy what they've got. They really have. You know, there are a lot of unsaved people that have learned to do that. You meet some of them. And they're wise. They're wiser than a lot of Christians. And because they've just learned to get the good out of what they've got and rejoice in it, you know, and live basically a happy life. You know, God has given that to them. God has given that to them. It's God that reigns on the just and the unjust. It's God that, you know, has set the vanity in this life. There's no work, though, in those days. It says the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. So just realize that. Get the good out of it, but know that it's going to end. So don't try to get the chief good out of it. That's the basic idea. Don't try to get the chief good out of it, but do get good out of it when you see the sun. Verses 9 and 10. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart, and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. This is really interesting. Here he's talking to the young. And he's basically saying, those of you that are young, get all the blessing possible that you can out of this fleeting life. In verse 9, there, the beginning of it, when it says, rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth. Literally, make thy heart of good cheer to thee in the days of thy youth. And walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes, but know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Go ahead and get the blessings that come with youth. Go ahead. But know you'll be judged for it all. Therefore, do it in moderation. And do it with the understanding that it is not the chief good. Chapter 5, verses 18 and 19. Talking about that moderation. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he takes under the sun. That's good. And if God gives you power to eat your wealth and eat thereof of your wealth, good. That's a gift of God. So live it moderately. But God will judge. He will. Chapter 3 and verse 17, about God judging. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. Everything ultimately comes under God's scrutiny. In chapter 12 and verse 14, for God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. There are experiences of youth that you'll never have ever again. You'll never have them ever again. There are experiences and delights of youth that you'll never have again. You can't recover it. That time when your body was super healthy and super strong, and the way you felt and how you rejoiced in the battle or how you rejoiced in that competition or whatever, enjoy it. It'll never be quite like that again. There's some things you'll never experience. That first new bike you got, that first horse you got or whatever, or that horse or whatever, you know, the doggy you got, that first kiss, you know, all those things, you know, you remember as a youth, those things when you were young. There's some things that you'll experience in life, you'll never experience them again. You can't ever have your first dog again. You can't. And there are delights and excitements that you have as a child. You know, and thrills of going to grandma's house. It's the thrill of going out to the country if you lived in the city. Those thrills of seeing, you know, those things for the first time, those sights, those experiences, all those things. So get the best out of them while you're youth. But know that there's two ditches, and that's what verse 10 says. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh. You want to live youth to the full? Number one, put away sorrow. It is such a folly to deny yourself the blessings of youth. You know, like the Amish do, and like others. Youthfulness is filled with vitality and blessing and thrill and excitement. And if we always, you know, bind down our kids, they can't move, they can't squeak, they can't do this, they can't do that, and take away some of those excitements. They need those opportunities. Just sometimes, just go ahead and play in the mud. They sometimes just need that. Just let them go. They're having a good time. I remember one time we had it started out with a squirt gun fight. It ended up with buckets of water chasing one another all over the place. I'll never forget it. And the folks kind of just gave up on us, you know. They just finally said, let them have it. We went outside, you know. But we were fully dressed. It was wonderful. I'll never forget that time. You know, they were wise enough just to let us go ahead and just have at it. You know? Kind of a ruckus at first. Some of those wrestling matches, you know what I mean? They may get a little bit, but you know, just sometimes you just gotta, you know, those free for alls. You ripped something, but it was just, you know, it was just such an excitement or whatever. You know, you finally just let them go. You know, and they tear the thing to shreds ultimately or whatever. So I mean, just some things, just go ahead and let them do it. You don't want to just bind them down. Don't smile. You know, it's the Sabbath. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You let them have a good time. There's things that they'll have when they're youth. So don't deny the blessing of youth by sorrow. Moroseness is what the Hebrew means. Moroseness or fretfulness. That'll take away those blessings as a child. Childhood is meant to be full of joy and happiness. And of course, but on the other hand, don't destroy your youth with evil. That's the other ditch. Wild oats, brethren, sowing wild oats. You can do a stupid, dumb thing when you're a teenager and it'll ruin the rest of your life. You'll be blind now for the rest of your life. You played with that blasting cap. Now you haven't got a hand. You know, you lose your sight. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. So don't be stupid. And don't do evil. Don't take those kind of chances, you know, playing chicken with your cars or something. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Somebody will lose their life. Because you'll grow old fast enough. For childhood and youth are vanity. They're fleeting. So, since they're fleeting, get the most you can out of them. But since they are fleeting, don't put evil into them and to destroy the rest of your life. So be free in your heart. Use your youth, but don't abuse it. This Solomon's a wise man. He's a wise man. And so we have to give our children the freedom that they need, you know, the liberty that they need, and yet don't let them go wild. There's got to be the parameters. It's like a good teacher in school. He knows the time when to laugh at the class. You know, and something funny happened in the class, he'll laugh right along with them. But the teacher that's, you know, legalistic and, you know, is not sensitive and so forth, stop that laughter, you know. Class, you're getting out of control, you know what I mean? See? Can't let them have a good time. But they really appreciate the teacher that lets them have a good time. But when it's time to be serious, he won't compromise. You see, they appreciate that kind of teacher. Their flesh bucks it. It'll always buck it. Of course it will. They'll test it to the hilt. That's just part of it, you know. But they appreciate it. And so we want to learn to be the same. Chapter 12. This is a continuation and the same summary. And but in chapter 12, we have the analogy of old age. There's a beautiful, beautiful, picturesque figure of speech of the oncoming of old age. And it fittingly describes the end of all life. And that's death. And so it takes us down into old age and then death. I hate to say it, brethren, but we all grow old. You know, you never thought you'd grow old. You never thought you'd grow old. You will. You will. I got gray hairs to prove it. You grow old. You may never feel like it. Just ask Betty Leonard. You know, she's 16, you know. She's 45 going on 16. And her heart is just a constant bubble. Okay, chapter 12, verse 1. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. The implication is that if you will follow your Creator and you'll remember Him, you'll get more joy out of life. If you follow God, you will get more joy out of life than if you don't. And do it in the days of your youth, before you get old. Because when you get old, your pleasures are going to be limited. Your hearing isn't going to be as good. You'll never get the same thrill, probably, out of what you heard, because your hearing isn't as good. Your sight isn't as good. You'll never get the same thrill out of things you see. Your feelings aren't as good. Your emotions aren't the same. Everything has kind of worn down some. You're just not going to have the same thing. But thank God we can be young in our spirit. Hallelujah! We can be young in our spirit. And we can have those days of youth continue with us. Your youth is renewed like the eagles in our spirit. But see, now he's not really seeing that. What he's just viewing is all of life and all your natural experience of life. So the physical and the temporal pleasures of this life are limited by old age. So get the most out of them when you can. Get the most out of them when you can. And so the way you're going to do it is by remembering your Creator. Because He will help you live it to the best. The fullest and the best. Your happiest life will be walking with Jesus. Alright. Now verses 2 through 7 is a figurative expression of old age. It's a picturesque scene of the oncoming old age. It's a fit finale for observing this life's chief good. This life's chief good for us ends up in old age. All is vanity. Can't see as well, can't hear as well. Get senile even. And waste away, going to the grave. Wrinkled and gray. It obviously cannot be literal. It has to be representative and figurative of old age. Almost all the commentators agree that. So, let's view it. Now notice, it started in verse 1. It says, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth, you know, while the evil days come not. In other words, before those evil days, those days of old age, when you lose all that strength and vitality, you don't have it anymore. You got to walk slower, you got to do everything slower, you got to be more careful. So remember the Creator in the days of thy youth, before these days come. And then it describes the coming of those days, starting in verses 2 through 7. So how are those evil days described? Verse 2. While the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. Now, it's not just viewing a natural thing. It's obviously a picture of old age. And you'll see that as we continue on. The sun here undoubtedly represents that eternity that's in man. It's that inner vacuum you have for God. It's that eternity in man. That sun. And the sun will be darkened. That is, you know, you'll grow reflections of that the light and the life in your light will grow darkened. Probably what it's referring to. Notice in chapter 11 and verse 9 it says, "Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth." Wait. Where is it? Yeah, verse 7, excuse me. Chapter 11 and verse 7. Truly the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. Well, but the sun will become darkened. Or the light. The light is probably referring to the perception of the mind. Your light will also become darkened. Or the moon. The moon is probably referring to the soul as to its emotions and to its feelings. And it's the reflection of your mind. Your emotions are the reflection of your mind, even as the moon is a reflection of the light. And so the moon, your emotions are going to be darkened. You're not going to feel things the same way. Or the stars. The stars is probably referring to the five senses. Your five senses are going to wear down. You're not going to have the same sharpness of touch, taste, feel, sight, or hearing. You'll all get... nor the clouds return after the rain. This is probably possibly referring to senility. That is that downcast attitude. It's a thunderstorm after the rain, and it's kind of the sad, downcast attitude after misfortune. And it could refer to senility, or it could refer just to that kind of in old age, how you're just slower, there's just a greater soberness, there's not the free lightness of youth. There's a greater somberness in your life as in old age. Okay, let you go.